Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Community Exchange, brought to you by ComFest Radio. Later in the program, we will be talking with noted author Joy Kagawa about the Toronto dollar experience. First, we will talk about community currencies around the world, how they work, and how everyone can join a community currency exchange. A community exchange system is a trading network, which allows participants to buy and sell goods and services without using a standard national currency. There are a number of community exchange systems around the world. If you want to learn more about community exchange systems and community exchange networks, there's a central website for information called www.community-exchange.org. At this community-exchange.org website, you can locate a community exchange system near to your community or get advice on how to organize a community exchange in your town or city. There are many community exchange systems around the world with different names, like local exchange trading systems, trade exchanges, mutual credit trading systems, and time banks, as well as various community currencies. All these exchange systems have one thing in common. They are community-focused, in order to keep wealth where it is created, in the community where you live. Anyone can sign up with a local community exchange. When you get an account, you join an online community exchange, which can be described as an online shopping mall. When you're online with a community exchange, you can offer to buy and sell goods or services. If you sell goods or services, you get credits. Your credits accumulate, which allows you to buy things on the exchange from participating sellers and service providers. Generally, each exchange has its own form of currency or a unit of measurement, which serves as an accounting system to keep track of credits and debits. Some exchanges use community currencies as a physical record of electronic credits. There are over 2,500 different local community currency systems operating in many countries around the world. Some local community currencies in Canada include LETS, or Local Exchange Trading Systems, Our Community Dollar, Community Way Dollar, Brampton Dollars, Calgary Dollars, Salt Spring Dollars, Toronto Dollars, Unity Dollars, and Tamworth Hours. In the United States, Community Dollars, Time Dollars, the Penn Exchange, and Ithaca Hours are among the most successful community currency systems in the United States. In 2003, the Community Exchange System started operating an internet-based LET system in Cape Town, South Africa. This has grown into a global network of over 500 local exchange systems in more than 50 countries. In South Africa, the system, known as the Cape Town Talent Exchange, began in February 2003. The unit of currency is called the talent. Since 2003, when the South African system was initiated, there have been about 2.5 million talents traded, which is equivalent to 500,000 South African rands, according to one estimate. Another estimate in 2004 suggested that the total value of local exchange trading systems worldwide was 1 billion South African rand. Now, what are the benefits of local currencies? Local currencies tend to circulate more rapidly than national currencies. The same amount of currency in circulation is employed many times and results in far greater overall economic activity. Local currencies aren't richer, but they are busier. Since local currencies are only accepted within a community, their usage encourages the purchase of locally produced and locally available goods and services. Thus, for any given level of economic activity, more of the benefit accrues to the local community, and less of the community's financial resources flow out to other parts of the world. Local currencies enable the community to more fully utilize its existing productive resources, especially unemployed labor, which has a catalytic effect on the rest of the local economy. For example, Society normally uses only a small portion of its resources and opportunities. Almost everyone has underutilized knowledge, skills, and time that can be engaged productively. Many manufacturers have underutilized machinery, and local businesses have spare capacity. Community currencies are a creative means to enhance this untapped human potential. Some forms of community currency can promote greater utilization of resources over a wider geographic area. The Fourier Kipu system in Japan issues credits in exchange for assistance to senior citizens. Family members living far from their parents can earn credits by offering assistance to the elderly in their local community. The credits can then be transferred from the children to the parents in different communities. While most community currencies are restricted to a small geographic area, through the Internet, electronic forms of complementary currency can be used to stimulate transactions on a global basis. In China, for example, QQ coins are a virtual form of currency that has gained wide circulation. QQ coins can be purchased with Chinese yuan and then are used to purchase virtual products and services such as ringtones and online video game time. There are drawbacks to community currencies. A conventional national currency is generally harder to earn but easier to spend. Alternatively, LET systems are comparatively easy to earn but harder to spend. Still, the fact that there are 2,500 community currencies and community exchange systems around the world testifies to the fact that community currencies do work and they do provide a valuable service. Today we're talking with Toronto author Joy Kagawa about her experience with the Toronto dollar. Joy, why did you get involved with the Toronto dollar? And what are some of the things you've learned about community currencies?
Well, I was right there at the very beginning. I'd started off in Vancouver with the LET system, and I joined the LET system here as well when it was going here. So we launched in 1998, and it's still going on. Although it is morphing right now, it's becoming a currency that is going to be used as thank you gifts for volunteer work in community centers. And these are scripts, you know, the paper money. And we have a ruling from the city that social assistance won't be clawed back if you use these. So that's one of the benefits of using the Toronto dollar, is it can help to supplement the income that people get from social assistance. So the model we talked about was some of us had been part of LETs, and we saw that it was very time-consuming to do the accounting, and so we were looking at other models in the world, and one of the models we were looking at was the Ithaca Hour system.
Can you tell me about the Ithaca Hour?
Yes, it also uses script, paper, and they use the kind of paper that you can't copy, and because it was fiber and so on in there. And I think that the way they got people to receive these was through their potlucks, and they would hand them out, and then they would be used in certain businesses and with each other. And I think that's how it was. And we modeled ours sort of on theirs by issuing at the beginning $300,000 of paper money in ones, fives, tens, and twenties.
Oh, so this is the Toronto dollar?
Yes.
You mean,
yes.
Printed $300,000 worth,
yes,
of Toronto dollars?
Yes.
And
okay. I can't remember what it cost us to do that, but it was wasn't a penny. And we had it done by the Canadian Banknote Company or whatever it was.
And this is the same company that produces dollars for the mint?
Yeah. I think. So we had certain features so that they couldn't be copied if you knew how to look for them and so on. So, but the first thing we had to do was find businesses that would accept this. And our model was that the businesses would take this, and if they couldn't find other businesses to use them with, they could redeem them. And they would redeem them for 90 cents on the dollar. So that left 10% over, which we could then use for community organizations. So it was a kind of, I don't know what you would call that, but in a way you could see it as a fundraising kind of thing for community work. There would be loyalty to the businesses that were involved, because we would say these were community-minded organizations and so on. But the problem with that is it was very labor intensive to maintain the system. We couldn't get enough support from the banks and other places to take them and sell them and exchange them and so on and do that kind of accounting work for us. So it was purely done voluntarily, and the volunteer labor just dried up. People got worn out by doing this, and we weren't sufficiently skilled in keeping volunteers interested and putting enough time into doing that.
Of course, this was before the days of internet,
yes.
Everybody being online, so it was all manual labor.
Yes, that's right, and it continued to be, in fact. And I think if it had started now, it would be quite different.
Ah.
People could get it on the online and so on. There are many ways in which it could have worked better, but essentially we wore out the volunteers and we're not particularly successful at,
But it ran for a number of years.
Yes, it did.
1998, you say it
began. Yes, and is still ongoing in that it still exists, although it's changing its way of being.
It's morphing to Toronto Dollar version number two.
Yeah,
number,
I think, yeah, it's basically
it's
version number two. It's evolving. It hasn't died, and we hope that, you know, that it will be able to continue and be of some value. It's got a bit of a name recognition factor, and I know that they're working very hard to get businesses engaged and people who can see the value of it being used to help end poverty so that people can have enough to eat and so on.
It was a recognized form of currency.
Mm-hmm.
It was purchased by people and then spent in stores.
Yeah.
The stores could redeem it at banks?
No, through our treasurer, basically.
The stores would redeem the money through the treasurer. Where would they find this treasurer?
The treasurer would come every 2 weeks to the St. Lawrence Market, which is where most of the exchanges were being done. And then other businesses that were involved could simply call the treasurer, and the treasurer would come to them.
Participating merchants knew who to contact, and there was a procedure.
Yeah,
okay.
So it required this kind of recognition of people and all of that. So it did, in fact, create a little tighter network of people knowing each other, which is always a nice thing to have happen.
I can remember when I moved to Toronto, going to St. Lawrence Market, and there was a booth, a little like a sales booth, where you could walk up and buy Toronto dollars. So I did that, of course, and spent it around St. Lawrence Market, but where else did it go? Did it spread out from St. Lawrence Market?
Well, at one point in its heyday, there were about 200 or plus businesses, and there was Gerrard Square was with us. When they changed management, they stopped, but until then, we had the Food Basics over there as part of it, which was helping a lot of people in that area, and Zellers was part of it, and then the person at Zellers, they decided they would accept them if we would redeem them at par.
Uh-huh.
And so it wasn't of great benefit to the community in that sense, except that it kept the money circulating.
Mm-hmm.
So, in general, in just thinking about how we can answer some of the... the way I used to think about it is that here we are going down the tubes as a planet and having to do with the scarcity in our own hearts and so on. And there are other solutions, there are other ways to be, other ways to be community and to care about the commons and to care about people that are impoverished. And if the government is going to do that and the corporations are not sufficiently doing that, at least the community sector can step in. And this was the dream and the hope. I would say that we didn't, in fact, manage to do that enough, although we did stay alive for quite a while, and we did have a lot of community organizations that did receive funds from us. So, but for all that work, the value of it was not the amount of money we handed out. You know, it was, I think the idea exceeded the action.
But you're saying one of the measures of success of Toronto Dollar was the number of people that it helped.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. Like who? You're saying 10% of each Toronto dollar exchanged went to who?
Well, all kinds of community organizations. One good model would have been the St. John's Bakery model, where they hired a baker and paid that person in Toronto dollars so that that person could still have their social assistance and still get the supplemental money and, you know, use it at Food Basics or wherever for their food. And if we had more of that, it would have been more visible. But just simply to be a community organization and simply to receive a grant, that which is fine, but the reason to be engaged with it was not as enticing as it could have been. I mean, if an organization only exists to be a recipient and to have their hand out, it's not that they're becoming engaged in a process that assists them in the long term. And so that's one place where we failed, I think, to do more of that kind of thing. And being a purely volunteer group, I mean, for most of the time, we didn't have, I think, the leadership that we needed to be able to spread something that was would have been of deeper value than it was.
Well, tell me about the organization. I still think of this as a very ambitious experiment in developing a community currency. You were a banker, in a sense, for a number of years. Tell me about the organization. There would have been an organizing group or a board of directors or an executive. What was there to do with these
Well,
things?
I'd say that we did have a board, which was a dwindling handful of people. We had more chiefs than we had, you know, people out doing what needed to be done. And then the people that were doing what needed to be done were, I think, insufficiently recognized probably. So these are all things we learn from. And I would say failure is so completely fine in that it's evidence that one tried. And it's much better to have tried and failed than not to have tried at all. So I can be content with that, although I still do not experience it as a complete failure in that it is still here.
I think it was a grand success in many ways, one, the number of people that it helped, and also in a public relations sense, the fact that so many people know about the Toronto Dollar, it's already famous no matter what it has done, and you're saying that it is ready to go into a new form and evolve mm-hmm. into a second generation, that's sort of like Star Trek second generation. So it's hard to see failure in something that succeeded and is still evolving.
Yeah, that's a nice way to look at it too.
Well, I have a lot of faith in community currencies. So Toronto Dollar was a community currency which sprang out of some ideas like the Ithaca Hours experiment. Mm-hmm. And you were also involved in a Let's system in Vancouver, were telling me? What was that?
Well, I'll tell you how that started. I had finished writing a book called The Rain Ascends, and the last line in the book was, the journey will lead into the abundant way. And I was thinking, what is the opposite of abundance? You know, it is scarcity when the heart is constricted. And I'd been thinking about how there's something about money that constricts the heart. It's when they say time is money, then you don't have enough time or money. But when you're not involved in that mindset, then the heart is more expansive when you're doing other kinds of things besides trying to work for money. And then I heard about community currency, and I thought, oh, well, it won't be like looking money straight in the eye, and you can get mesmerized and killed dead by that look. You can get swallowed up by money if you look straight at money in the eye. So I thought, this would be like looking at money's big toe. I will look down and look at that and see if there is some way that we can walk. So I found out that there was a fellow called Michael Linton out on the West Coast who was very involved with he was the founder of the Let system, let's say. And I invited him over to the house in Vancouver, and we had a meeting with 50 people at that point. And we started a Let system there. And that lived for a while, and it died too.
No, LETS is a local employment
and trading system, or whatever you want to call it.
It's a mechanism for setting up it's like a barter exchange, is it?
It was a volunteer-heavy kind of system where exchanges are made and on paper at the time. And as you say, now we can do things through the computer, and that would have been completely different in terms of accessing your list of people and so on and so on. It's a different world. And I think Let's today might have a much better chance of succeeding than it did before because the people can monitor themselves. So it doesn't have to be quite so time heavy for a volunteer, although I'm sure it still is needed to get these things set up.
Well, that's a Let system. So in Vancouver, then, what happened? People would contribute their time to this and record their hours, for mm-hmm. example, in the Let system, and then how would they get paid back for the contributions they made?
Well, by going into the system, find out who's doing what else and receiving something in exchange. Well, it's not a direct barter exchange. It's one-to-many, you know, so you sell your whatever it is you're either doing or offering, and you buy whatever it is on the system. And it can be fun, and there were all kinds of great things about that. So when you came to Toronto, I joined that right away and was part of that for a while too. So I accumulated more than I spent, which is not a good way to be in the LET system. It's better to spend more. I think it keeps it more active than just, you know, I mean, it's an anti-hoarding kind of thing. And that's a good way to see this. It expands the heart more when you don't hoard. So, and I'm a hoarder, you know, even if I live in just one room, I still haven't learned to trust enough to spend more. I spend less.
So when you were involved in the LET system, you were hoarding hours?
I would, you know, I would sell my things, but I wouldn't buy back.
Oh.
And so then I had too much. And I didn't, there wasn't enough on there for me to want to spend.
You wound up with too many credits and you weren't
spending. And that's really the opposite that it should be.
Well, you know, that's an interesting dynamic, because this is what they are saying is now happening in the Canadian economy.
Yeah.
The Minister of Finance is saying that big businesses have lots of cash. And they're not spending the cash, and that's one of the problems with the economy.
Uh-huh.
So this dynamic, this problem happens at the national economic level as well as at the community currency level.
It's a matter
of
the heart.
How to get everyone to participate.
Yeah.
A matter of the heart. And why,
well, I think it's a matter of knowing who you serve and what you serve. And if you serve money, then you will want more and more of it for no good reason than that you serve it. And, you want to serve it by having more. But if you serve the work that money does, that is, if your money is your servant, then it's not like that. It's the other way around. So it's a matter of who you serve. You can serve love, and then your life expands, and your space expands, and there is enough time for love's work. If you serve money, your life constricts, your money expands, but everything else constricts. And you don't have enough time. So when you're dead, you know, you go to the grave with this model, you have a lot of cash, and it's very cold. It's very cold cash, which is very cold comfort for you, if that's your life. You end up with lots of money and without friends, you know, I think. The kind of friends you have when you have money is the kind of friends that the prodigal son had when he had money. And you realize at the end, oh my gosh, I wasted my life, you know.
Well, this is very interesting. If I hear you correctly, you're saying there's more love in community currencies, or
there can be
more love in community currencies, especially when you participate more.
That's exactly right. I think that's the whole thing. And the thing about that is then you have this expanded life. You know, you have what we can call the abundant life. It's then the opposite of the scarcity model. And so the more of the community currencies we have in a city, we need lots and lots of them, all kinds of little experiments. Because then you have small groups of people who get to know each other, and lives are expanded by this, and all kinds of things that we can do. I mean, I was thinking the other day of saving the planet one butt at a time, you know. And instead of having the streets completely littered with cigarette butts, you could have all kinds of things that you can do by picking them up, by handing out these little packets where people put their ash in cigarettes and eventually get off smoking. And this could be a community currency initiative, some small little industries that we can do for people who say that's part of a walking group. They go for a walk, and while they're doing it, they collect the cigarette butts and keep it cleaner, and then pass the word around that you can, you know, these are tiny little dust specks of thoughts. And I think of these little dust, I mean, the planet, if you look at the perspective in the universe, it is less than a dust speck. And yet it matters so completely to us. So that makes me feel that no matter how tiny the idea is, and no matter what little bit of dust speck it is in your thought or in your heart, it matters. It matters as much as the whole universe, because this planet of ours, which is little dust speck, matters as much to us as the whole universe does. And so that's why I think that it's not a matter of largeness to be successful. That's the way the world sees it now, but I don't think the universe sees it that way.
Joy, these are really interesting ideas, and I want to come back to something that you just mentioned. You were talking about things that need to be done in a community,
yeah.
Whether it's picking up cigarette butts on the street, or the hundreds of other things, cleaning up parks, cleaning up roads.
Or getting us to turn the lights off so the birds don't fall into the ground. That's the thing that kills me around here.
And there are hundreds and hundreds of things that people can do to help their community.
Yeah.
And yet the municipal government, which is underfunded, says that it doesn't have enough money to develop programs. However, from what you're saying, I'm thinking municipal governments could initiate public service projects, ask for volunteers, and pay them in community currency.
So wouldn't that be lovely if they could see this vision? You know, one of the things that Bernard Leder says in his book, Thinking Money, is that it would be like a carpenter coming along and saying, I can't do this job for you because we've run out of inches. You know, and it's something like that, because money is an idea. I mean, I don't understand this idea particularly. I just know that there's something wrong with the way the world is.
There's something wrong with the way the world is running now. One comment I heard from someone who we were talking about community currencies, and he said we live in a monoculture economically, which means there's one way of doing it, and the solution is to develop many ways of doing things. And just the having of many ways of doing things is part of the solution. And one of the ways that we can add on to our national economic currency is to develop community currencies. Now the Toronto dollar was a fabulous experiment. It's still a fabulous experience, and who knows what it will do next year. But this idea of community currencies, not as an alternative form of currency, but as a complementary currency, so that we can have a variety in our currency system. And all of the things that you're talking about, these are the things that community currencies can lead to. Volunteering and being reimbursed, being able to use community currency for apprenticeship programs and for public services. It opens the door to so many things that could be done that aren't being done now.
Yes. It is one of these little things of hope. I think these, I used to think of it as, okay, if we're on the Titanic, what can we do? And I thought, we can take the deck chairs and we can break them apart and we can make life rafts. So I was thinking of the Toronto Dollar as the making of a life raft, as a model that we can present, which can be implemented by some people down the line who have not given up hope as to what we can do to save communities. We don't have to be dependent on this huge monolithic thing. We can do some little thing and some of us can survive, if that's what's coming. If Stephen Hawking is right, if we've only got 200 years on this planet and then we're gone. If that's true, then we need to do whatever we can right now. And it can be these small things. You know, we do need the big things. Obviously, Caesar is important. Caesar will build roads. And those of us who are not Caesar can do all kinds of things.
Like developing the Toronto dollar.
Yeah.
And, well, Joy, I want to thank you for describing your experience with the Toronto dollar and letting us, helping us understand what is a community currency on an operational level, on the smaller level than the national currency, and all the good things that it can do. Underneath your pessimism, you have a lot of hope because of these alternative ways of doing things at the community level.
Well, what I do have an essential trust, which is what I have. I have no idea what kind of suffering is coming, and it might be just beyond belief, the amount of it, in terms of numbers and huge suffering. I mean, this whole planet has been a place where there is a huge amount of suffering. But so my hope has to be other than this or that thing. And so my hope is based on the trust that I have, that underlying all of this is goodness. I just have to hold that.
Well, thank you very much, Joy Kagawa, Toronto author, talking about her experience with the Toronto dollar and community currencies and how they can help us, and how by participating in community currency experiments and experiences, the world can have more hope. Thank you, Joy.
Thank you, Max.
Community Exchange is an ongoing discussion of issues affecting communities around the world. Community Exchange is brought to you by Comfest Radio. Comfest Radio is produced by Comfest Global Community Film Festival. This year's ComFest will happen September 12 to 15 in Toronto's famous St. Lawrence Market area. For information about ComFest, visit comfest.com. That's spelled C-O-M-M-F-F-E-S-T, comfest.com. We will close this program with our theme music, composed by jazz musician Wilson McLeish. If you want more information on this music, go to whamjamjazz.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.